Well, welcome everyone to the Screamcast, a podcast covering pretty much all things Scream Factory. I'm your host, Sean DeRager.
I'm Brad.
I want to thank everyone for listening to our first official podcast. I think we got some good feedback. No virtual tomatoes thrown at us yet, so I would say it's a success.
We don't know yet. We have to get a few more under our belts.
I know. Well, for those who checked out the first episode, thank you very much for checking it out. I do need to give a couple shout-outs this week that I forgot to do last week. I need to do a shout-out to Tom Nixt. He was our 100th Twitter follower. He's at Tom Nixt on Twitter, N-I-X-T. And he actually has a wrestling podcast that, of course, I'm not prepared, and I didn't have the name of his podcast written down. But follow Tom.
Here we go.
It's in his little header on Twitter. And then also shout out to Dead as Hell podcast. They were our first iTunes review, so they gave us a pretty good review on there. So follow them. I believe Dead as Hell HP on Twitter. Follow them there and check out their podcast.
I think when you hit 100 Twitter followers, that's when you know you really made it, right?
I think so.
I think we can also just quit the show because I think we made it. I can die a happy man.
Did we? Okay, my bank account's filling up, so you know.
And well,
today we got a pretty good show lined up for you. I'm pretty excited about it. We're going to be talking to Big Ass Spider producer Travis Stevens. He's on the Skype call with us right now. We're going to be reviewing the Darkman Blu-ray put out by Scream Factory. And we have music by There.
Each There is spelled different. You got to say that because that ruins.
Yeah,
ruins it. It's a surprise.
Yeah. You know, I don't know these hipster bands these days. I don't understand them. But anyway, members of Intuit, Over It, and Owen started up that band, so it's kind of a cooler group. All right. Like I said, we have a special guest this week. We're talking to Travis Stevens. He's produced movies such as The Aggression Scale, A Horrible Way to Die, the upcoming documentary Jodorowsky's Dune, as well as Big Ass Spider, the documentary Big Ass Spider. His current flick. I'm just kidding.
You mean just mention Cheap Thrills? That's what everybody wants to hear.
No, that's what I'm saying. His current flick, Cheap Thrills, has just hit VOD and will hit theaters on March 21st. Please welcome Travis Stevens to the Screamcast. Enter applause here. Travis, thanks for joining us tonight.
Can I tweet some applause at you guys?
Yeah, no, please tweet some applause at us.
I'll do so. Hello.
What's up, man?
Have you guys seen a documentary called Unhung Hero?
No, Unhung? No,
I have not.
Played South by Southwest last year, apparently. And that's what I was doing before jumping on the call, watching with my wife a documentary about a gentleman who proposed to a girl on camera, and she denied him. Oof. And it was because his wang was too small. And then he made a documentary about that. Wow. So what is his name? Patrick something, but he's at Unhung Hero on Twitter. So I'm going to – oh, I apparently already follow him. That's strange. Anyways, yeah. So get a chance. Watch it. Watch it. It's very interesting.
I don't know. Us,
dude, that sounds interesting at least.
Yeah. Us in the small Wayne community, I don't know if I can handle
it. Listen,
that.
if we band together, we can give joy to at least one woman.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. If we all get together –
Yeah. No, at the same time. That's what I'm saying. And with some rubber bands, it'll be fine.
Yes.
All right. I'll be over in 5 minutes. Let's just cut the podcast now. I'll be over.
Dear God Almighty, where have we sunk to?
Yeah, I know. That's the problem with the PM podcast. You know, the wine gets involved. And
yes.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's what I was doing, in case you were wondering what I was doing.
Well, how do we jump into interview questions now? Is what I'm wondering.
I think we're interviewed by Travis at this point.
I know. Well,
Sorry about that.
I'm just gonna steamroll into this, Travis. You know, a lot of people talk about directors and writers when discussing movies, but you know, I think the producers of the film can be considered, and this is totally unplanned, but producers of a film can be considered the unsung heroes of a film project.
Oh my god!
Yeah, no.
Awesome.
Let's just say hung.
Unhung heroes.
There you go. Too.
So basically, you know, how did you originally get into producing films? You have quite a handful of films under your belt as a producer.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You know, and I'm saying that as somebody who obviously goes, you know, through it every day. But I think there's a perception of producers that's maybe based on an outdated model. And sort of, you know, the way producers have been represented in movies and stuff. I just think there's sort of this caricature of somebody who's sitting there, who, you know, smoking a cigar and is rich and, you know, just wants to make money, and the poor artist has to struggle against them. And, you know, it's like, at least in my experience, I wish I had money and I was smoking a cigar and could just yell at people and be in a hot tub and just have half naked Swedish volleyball team members around me. But, no, I mean, I think, you know, I work a lot with sort of first time directors and at this point have focused a lot on sort of genre films that are trying to do things that are more interesting than typical horror films. And a lot of times the job is really sort of helping the filmmaker define and sort of express their ideas in a way that is going to be successful. So for me, it starts a lot, you know, at the concept stage all the way through the script development, where sort of helping work an idea to the point where it's something somebody would want to invest in, and also something that an audience would connect to. And then on set, it's sort of the same, where you're just sort of helping the director and everybody sort of execute the idea in such a way that it holds together as a sort of watchable film. But it's not something, you know, if you're really successful, then the director and the writer and the actors and everybody sort of gets their accolades, and you know, it's good. But there's not a lot of people like, oh yeah, yeah, that was a really well produced film. You know, because what does that even mean? You know,
yeah.
Because I don't think people are aware of, you know, what actually producing is. You know.
Yeah, and that's one thing I always notice, you know, because of course I've seen you, you know, at Fantastic Fest and spoken to people who know you, and you're really, really involved with the projects that that you work on, and I think that's great, because like you said, you know, a lot of people think producing is just somebody maybe sitting behind a desk and saying yes, let's do this, but you're there, you know, working your ass off. You know, and it's great. And I think that's what a lot of more, especially independent filmmakers need, are producers that are there, that are working with them, instead of kind of, you know, because it's always a thing is, you know, Hollywood producers are just, they run the show. And you always hear those stories of, you know, producers that it's not even up to the director anymore. You know, it's just the producers telling people what to do. And, you know, working at the independent filmmaking is completely different from all aspects, not just from you, but just from other people I've heard. You know, indie producers are just great to work with because it's just like one of the crew, you know. So I think that's pretty cool.
I mean, I kind of think of it like the 13th Warrior. You know, where it's just a bunch of dudes getting in a boat, and you're going to row out and you're going to go to war, and hopefully you're going to, you know, successfully kill the beast and come back and be victorious, you know, and you sort of need that all hands on deck, and everybody's going to, you know, get some blood on them and, you know, just go for it, you know.
Yeah.
And this could just be because at this budget level, I mean, maybe at the bigger budget levels, it's not such a battle. Maybe everything's easier, but you know, at least for me and the people I've worked with, I mean, that's sort of the mindset.
Yeah. Now when someone comes to you with a project, what are some things that you like, key things that you look for, like in the script or anything that you look for before you actually commit to raising money for the film or getting behind it?
I think it just has to be doing something interesting, something I haven't seen before, or
like a big ass spider.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like even big ass spider, which is, yeah. is you know, it, that's a ham and cheese sandwich, but you know, the, when it came to me and it was, Dino Spider, and it was sort of, it was like a challenge where they were like, hey, what can we do to make this, you know, better? And, you know, it was like, all right, oh, I want to do like a Sci-Fi Channel movie. But, you know, with that challenge of, hey, how do we make this cool? Then, you know, it was like, all right, let's find the right filmmaker to come in. And, you know, it sort of became the process of trying to figure out a way to do a movie within that framework that actually, you know, was warranted its existence. Unlike, I think, most of those movies that do.
Yeah.
But in general, I mean, that was kind of an exception where it was kind of like, you know, somebody came to me and was like, hey, we want to make a movie in this genre, you know, make it good. But usually it's just, you know, somebody I've known or a friend or a filmmaker I respect, and they say, hey, I got this idea for something. And if it's set in, it's either got to be doing something completely new, or saying something that I personally respond to, or if it's in a sort of existing subgenre, it has to flip the script on it in an interesting way. So if it's a haunted house movie, okay, what's going to make this movie different? If it's, you know, like big ass spider, what can we do to make it different? So that's pretty much it. I mean, because it's like, you're not really making tons of money, so you want to be doing something that at least is creatively fulfilling.
Yeah. Yeah. It was something with big ass spider that I definitely noticed, because I'm not a big sci-fi, fan, but I know Mike Mendez was behind it, and I really, really love the Grave Dancers. So when I heard this was coming out, I was, you know, I was intrigued. I was still kind of, you know, a little bit skeptical, but one thing that really hit with, I think, Big Ass Spider, and you know, I don't like if people just dismiss it because it, you know, looks and kind of feels like a sci-fi movie, but the writing and the comedic aspect is absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. And that saves in a film on so many levels. Not targeting Big Ass Spider, but any film with good writing, because the characters in that film just had me cracking up the entire time. And usually you look at those films and you're laughing at the subject matter or the stupidity versus this was legitimately funny and kind of a, you know, just that opening with the, you know, the cover of Where's My Mind, with Greg walking through, you know, like just the blast and everything. It just started off and it grabbed you right away. And yeah. I've seen the sci-fi movies and this one hit certain things that was completely different. So,
yeah, those sci-fi movies aren't even on the level of what Big Ass Spider is. And it seems like they try to be, I mean, it was like Big Ass Spider got all the aspects right that all the sci-fi movies just get wrong. You know, there's actual genuine humor as opposed to kind of forced, let's just try to be dumb humor. You know, like there's genuine wit in the script that had me, especially with the security guard, you know, and the dynamic between them, you know, those two characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like, the secret ingredient to making a good movie is actually giving a shit, you know?
Right.
And I think with a lot of those, sort of those movies and a lot of TV movies, the formula is what the network is buying. So the people producing the film just know that they need to hit the formula, you know, the structure, the cast, the element, you know, they there are certain boxes that need to be checked. And actually caring about making a good movie is not nearly as important to getting the movie made as checking the boxes. And the reason why Mike was, you know, the best person for that job is because he actually cared. You know, he's like, all right, so it's a goofy concept. What can I do to, you know, get excited about this? And what can I do to make this interesting? And when the actors came on board, Greg and Lombardo played Jose, it's the same sort of thing. You're creating this environment where it's like, all right, guys, this is the, you know, the toolbox we have. What can we do to make something fun and interesting? So the actors start riffing on it. And then all of a sudden, you know, Mike's like, all right, that's cool. Let's give that room to breathe. And the next thing you know, you have something with a pulse and it's, you know, it's fun. And sure, we're still hitting the same structure as a sci-fi movie, but at least we're, you know, the movie is existing on its own on terms beyond that.
Yeah. I got to ask you, and then we'll move on from Big Ass Spider, I promise. How did you guys get past the ratings board? And maybe it's just me being a parent because I saw, you know, Big Ass Spider and I was like, well, my son he loves Godzilla movies. He's 6 years old. And he's seen every single Godzilla movie except for the Roland Emmerich one. I won't allow him to watch that one. Every single one of those, he's seen, Gamera, and he loves those things. So I figured, oh, this would be a perfect thing for me and him to sit down and watch. My daughter decided she wanted to watch it too, so we're all kind of watching it, and I'm like, oh, it's PG-13, you know, we'll be all right. and then there's a scene going through one of the park, you know, a park in L.A., very similar to a park that I destroyed when I was playing Grand Theft Auto V. But anyway, the spider's going through this park and just impaling, you know, person after person. And I'm, you know, I'm kind of sitting there watching it going, oh, this is a little bit heavy for a 6 year old. And, but then I look up and my son is looking at me just crying his eyes out. So I was like, okay.
That's on my shoulders now.
Shitty parent of the year right here. So I turned off the movie and calmed him down and he's fine with the spider. He's fine with it jumping out, but it was the impalings that got him. And he's like, I'm going to have nightmares, you know. It's just, you know,
I don't know because it is. I mean, like a dude gets torn in half. I don't what the MPAA is saying, like maybe because it's in the daylight and it's a big cartoony monster. But yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. Like a guy gets his face melted, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
I personally apologize to you.
That's fine. I'm sorry. It's my poor parenting skills. It's okay. But then again, you know, my parents took me to Gremlins, and I, you know, was on the floor. Actually, I asked them to take me to Gremlins, but that's beside the point. And I was on the floor of the theater crying my eyes out as soon as the old lady went up the stairs in her electric stair thing and out the window.
How did you not laugh, though?
I don't know, man.
Because that's hilarious.
I know, but as a...
I guess I'm just a demented little shit when I was little, but man, I thought that was hilarious.
I was 6 years old and, you know, an old lady died. I don't know. Someone's grandma died. That's all I know.
But she was a bitch.
I know. I guess I was too young to grant the concept of a bitchy woman, I guess. Anyway, we'll move on from Big Ass Spider. But so we've talked a little bit about kind of the creative pull that you have during these movies. Do you feel like you're kind of a teammate with the director? Do you make suggestions, or is it all kind of, do you just give the control to the writer and directors of the film? What's your kind of work relationship with these, with the creatives, I guess, of the film?
Yeah, I think it adjusts depending on the dynamics on that particular film. Mm-hmm. So some films you have to be a little more involved, and some films you can sort of be a bit more passive. But yeah, I mean, going into it, and again, I work with a lot of first-time filmmakers, mm-hmm. so you're both a safety net and sort of a, you know, a wilderness guide. Yeah, I mean, it's you just kind of have to adjust depending on the situation.
Right.
I mean, the goal there is to help the person successfully accomplish what they're setting out to do. And sometimes that's by proposing a different approach, and sometimes that's by, you know, shutting up. I don't know. Yeah, I'm really hands-on, but only when I think it's necessary.
Let's. I mean, that's. Was it a little awkward silence there for a second? So yeah. I'll just start speaking. No, I mean, I think that's great. And but also, my question is that you're a busy dude. So how much of these? I mean, are you at every one of these sets as much as you possibly can be? I mean, because I know, you know. Some of them were filmed a couple years ago, but still, I mean, just the lineup alone in the past, I would just say 3 years for you. You've been a busy man.
Yeah, no, the first one we shot in 2010, A Horrible Way to Die, and I've done 10 since then. And your sort of workflow on each movie is about 3 years. You have, you know, on average a year to 2 years in development, then a year during the production phase, you know, from pre-production through editing, then a year on the festival circuit, and then you're still doing the sort of, you know, the accounting and the taxes and everything. So I guess it's like 4 years span on each movie. And the thing is like my company, it's me. So it's, you know, yeah. I mean, I partner with different people on different movies, but a lot of the times it's, you know, everything from the development through the accounting is sort of coming through my laptop. So yeah, it gets to be, it's really fucking busy. And my wife is like, what are you doing? But, you know, I used to sweep floors for like 14-hour night shifts as a janitor. It's like I would much rather be killing myself making art than, you know, doing that. So it feels like a blessing, even though it's exhausting.
Yeah. Well, you've been, like we said, you've been busy producing all these films. Do you – I know that you helped – I don't know if you wrote or you helped write Summer's Moon – do you plan on getting back into directing anything anytime soon or writing or anything like that?
Why don't we just take a moment to just think about Summer's Moon?
I haven't seen it, so.
I saw it in genre filmmaking.
Release, but yeah, I don't I mean, really that, remember it. We'll just skip that.
That was my real firsthand sort of like lesson in how something awesome can turn into something awful, like right in front of your eyes, you know. And it was like, because it had been a project that I'd been trying to get going, and we brought on different writers, and like Evan Katz, who directed Cheap Thrills, was somebody that I brought in, and Simon Rumley, who did Red, White, and Blue, was somebody I brought in. I mean, we had like really developed that, and finally I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'll just write a draft myself just to get it on paper, and then at least people will get the idea. And so it was like, oh, that's great. Let's finance it. It's going to go into production. And then just during the production, it was like Ashley Green comes out and she's like fully clothed, and they go to chain her to this garden that she's supposed to be a part of. And I'm like, wait a second. She's like fully clothed. Like, what is this? And they're like, no. He's going to keep her fully clothed. I'm like, wait a second. The guy like chains girls up in his basement, like fully clothed. Like, what kind of weirdo is this? I mean, he's chaining girls in his basement to like have sex with them. Like, wouldn't he want them to at least be in their underwear or something? And it wasn't even that she had a problem with it. It was just like, it didn't occur to anybody that we were making like a horror film and that would probably be something. Anyways, so yeah.
I'm sorry to bring up. I'm sorry to you know, peel open the scab of Summer's Moon.
Great. Yeah. Podcast is over.
But I mean, no, that was that's actually a good thing. It was like, it was a valuable lesson in sort of protecting the integrity of your idea. Mm-hmm. And if you know, it's important to you, then you have to be the one calling the shots.
Right.
And, you know, I'm totally grateful to the people who made that movie and everybody worked on it and everybody worked really hard. But, you know, it was a lesson. And you know, I've been fortunate since then to be the one that says, no, this is important. Let's push it. Or, you know, here's what the essence of the idea is, and here is why what you're suggesting undermines that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems to be working so far, where, you know, even if the movies are low budget or uneven at certain points, at least they feel like they have their integrity, you know?
Yeah. So I gather you're going to be sticking to producing. Is that, or do you have anything that you know,
Yeah, I mean, it's something. It's come up a bunch. Mm-hmm. Nothing yet. I think if I do something, it'll be more like Lars von Trier style, where it'll just be hopefully
women chained up in basements.
Yeah, exactly. No, but so I don't know. I like making movies, but I like making movies, you know, with collaborators, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm going to be the captain yet. Okay. So, but thank you for asking.
Hey, no problem.
This is another awkward silence. Awkward.
That means it's your turn, Brad.
Well, I'll just ask a question.
Yeah. I'll edit. Don't worry about it. I'll edit.
Oh, you're going to edit that out? You're going to edit my, you know, breaking the silence there.
Yes.
Fix it in post.
So we'll sound professional.
Well, you know, no, just leave it in. Just leave it in. Everybody can hear how I'm a dumbass, and I didn't know that was my cue to start speaking.
I would like a British accent from this point forward. Is that okay, mate? Try fixing this in post, wanker.
I can do a Russian accent. I don't know how much I can do a British accent, but I don't know. I think I might throw people off. I'm not ready for that.
I'm not ready to piss off any other continents. It's okay.
No, well, I could think of something with, since this is a Scream Factory podcast and we haven't actually spoke about them yet. How would you feel if, something that you are recently producing and trying to find distribution, because I mean, not everything that you, you know, any filmmaker in general, you don't start off with distribution right away. How would you feel if they came to you and, you know, proposed a deal, with kind of like the record that they have at this point, also picking up newer films? Cause they've released like two or three, and they have like two or three more on the way. How would you feel about that?
Well, as somebody who doesn't have any undistributed films, I wouldn't know how to answer. No.
yeah. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, I think with a lot of, you know, distributors, it's sort of being an aggregator of taste, you know, and yeah, I'm excited. It's funny because I was in Toronto this weekend at a video store, just shopping for things, and like a bunch of The Nest was one title I was looking at. What was another one? There was another one. Oh, I don't see it now, but yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, and it's nice that there's companies out there willing to, you know, sort of gather, you know, these movies, maybe they're not the biggest commercial successes, but there's a merit to them and at least, you know, give them a chance. And so I'm all for it.
Cool.
Do you have any favorite releases so far? Like, have you started collecting some of these titles or?
No, I have not. I went through, man. Yeah, no, but I mean, it's, I hate to say it, but you know, I'm so sort of VOD and sort of digital, like that's the way I'm consuming most of the films I watch. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them tend to be, sort of newer stuff. So it's like, I'll go through spurts of trying to, you know, fill in, catalog stuff. But I've been through this since like when I first moved to LA, like collecting VHSs, and they had this like, you know, extensive VHS collection. And then over the course of moving like three or four times, that dwindled down, and then, mm-hmm. okay, I'll replace it with the DVD collection. And then that, you know, got stolen and dwindled down, and then, okay, then Blu-ray. So it's like I've really got to the point where just that idea of digital and having access to it when you need it, like really worked for me. But today I spent $200 on Criterion Blu-rays, but it's a half-off sale. But
oh, that's yeah. right. Yeah, their half-off sale ends at noon.
Mad Fox
is your code you put in. You can get Blu-rays for $20.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that because I'm going to spend a bunch of money and my wife's going to get pissed off at me.
Oh, I did watch Cat People this weekend.
Oh, nice.
The Blu-ray. Oh, my God. It's so good. So good.
We'll have to cover that soon. That's next in line for me to buy for sure.
Yeah.
I honestly, with they release, like, it's like their fourth Kinski film. I just can't get past that guy. I've always, it's just one, he's always creeped me out since I was, can I remember, man? And every film, like, it's every time Scream Factory releases something, Klaus Kinski's in it. And I'm like, oh, God, he just gives me the creeps. Yeah. Anybody else like that? No? Just
no,
me?
No, no.
No, I heard a creepy story about him, though.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. That made it worse, because it was always like that. And then that creep, are you talking about the whole daughter thing?
Yeah. Which I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know. And I'm watching Cat People, like, totally being a scumbag. And then that piece gets passed along, and I just felt bad.
No, and it changes. It does really change the movies for you, because it was bad for me. Now it's even worse, because I'm like, he's getting all angry with these ladies. And I'm like, ooh. Yeah. But
should we ruin everyone else's experience of Cat People? And I honestly haven't heard the story, so.
Oh well, I don't think
it bring
really
the podcast down. Google it.
No, no, that's a terrible story. Let's yeah.
It's hearsay.
If you really want to know, look it up. But let's not get into that, because it just kind of creeps me out.
Google that shit and then tweet us. Okay.
There you go.
All right. Hey, Travis, why don't you give us go ahead and we want to give you some time to kind of plug the releases you have coming up. You have a couple coming up here in March. For theatrical, and then you have a few titles that you're, you know, working on as well.
Yeah. So currently on VOD in the United States is a title called Cheap Thrills, directed by Evan Katz, that Drafthouse Films put out. And it comes out, they're going to put it in theaters next month, March 21st. We are currently doing a fun little promotional game called Share to Dare, which basically, if people on Twitter tweet enough Share to Dare, hashtag Cheap Thrills, request filmmakers and people will do dares. So today I had the pleasure of putting a live mouse into my underwear, nice. Which, which really, this is what independent filmmaking has come to, where you're basically doing jackass stunts trying to encourage people to watch a movie.
The glamour.
Which for cheap. Yeah, yeah, exactly. No hot tubs.
It works, though. It works. I'm ready.
Well, hopefully. It's a fun movie. It's a wicked indictment of the American dream. So hopefully people will enjoy that. Jodorowsky's Dune, Sony Classics, is putting out on the same day theatrically, March 21st, which is about Alejandro Jodorowsky's failed attempt to bring Frank Herbert's Dune to the big screen back in the 70s. And it is a movie about his failure to do so, but how sometimes failing to make art doesn't mean you can't still have an influence over the world. And that was a lot of fun. It premiered in Cannes and played Toronto and Telluride and Fantastic Fest and picked up some awards. So anybody who's a fan of making films or Alejandro, you know, should definitely check that out. March 8th at South by Southwest, we're premiering Dennis Widmer and Kevin Kolsch's Starry Eyes, which is, cult tale set in Hollywood, kind of like Rosemary's Baby type movie about a struggling actress who thinks she gets her big break. And it turns out she loses her soul. I don't know. I just totally whiffed the log line there. But basically, yeah, it's another movie about just fucking how ugly ambition and the price of success can be. And then we just wrapped Ted Gigan's We Are Still Here, a 1979 set haunted house movie with Barbara Crampton from Your Next and Larry Fessenden from Your Next and a multitude of other awesome films. Andrew Sensenig from Upstream Color and Lisa Marie from Mars Attacks. So
cool. I'm excited for that one. Anything set in the 70s and dealing with a haunted house, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's and it's in New England, so you get
that's
lots
a hook
of,
right there already. It's 1970 haunted house movie.
Yeah,
I'm ready.
So hopefully, I think people will have fun with it, because, like I was saying earlier, it's like, okay, it's not just enough to you know, we're not trying to do a low budget Conjuring. It's like, all right, what is going to make this movie sort of stand on its own feet? Mm-hmm. And the shit gets crazy in it. I guarantee you, you've not seen a haunted house movie like this. It there's so much bloodshed in it. It's fantastic.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah, I think Barbara Crampton actually tweeted a picture of the cameraman, like, completely, like, covered in plastic. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way it was for most of the shoot. It was Kareem Hussein, who was the cinematographer who did Hobo with the Shotgun and Theater Bazaar and stuff. So he was prepared for the blood coming at the lens.
Well, I think with that, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about Darkman. Travis, you gonna hang around and talk a little Darkman with us?
I think I'm gonna go back and watch my documentary about the guy with the small dick.
Okay.
Or I can hang out. Either, whatever you guys want.
That depends if Travis likes the music or not.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good transition. I'm almost like, all right, later. But you know, if you want to hang out and talk Darkman, Travis, you're totally welcome to. If you got to take off, that's fine too. So it's up to you, man.
No, I would love to.
All right, cool. Well, we're gonna jump into a break here. This band is called There. Features Evan Weiss from Into It Over It, Mike Kinsella from Owen and American Football, and Cap'n Jazz.
No joke, Cap'n Jazz is one of my favorite 90s bands.
So good.
And I had a chance to see him when they reunited a couple years ago. Wow. Very stoked.
And then also Matthew Frank from Loose Lips Sink Ships. This is their song New Blood from their new-ish EP called Analog Weekend. You're listening to The Screamcast.
Devil ain't letting fly.
That was There, all spelled differently, with the song New Blood. It's from their EP that just came out late in 2013, called Analog Weekend. It's coming off of Top Shelf Records, is the record label that put that out. And it's a pretty good EP. I dig it. So you should check it out. All right, well, we have Travis Stevens is going to hang out and talk a little bit of Dark Man with us. We're going to talk about Scream Factory's one of their newest releases, Dark Man, out on Blu-ray. It also, this is the second time Dark Man has come out on Blu-ray, but
I own the previous Dark Man release on Blu-ray, and you know, I have this, and even though I'm kind of biased with Scream Factory already, you know, it is small improvement. It's equivalent to like Halloween 2 was already previously released on Blu-ray, and this is Scream Factory's version. And they touch it up here and there, and of course the sound I think is an improvement.
Yeah.
Because I've owned both, but yeah, it's definitely a nice upgrade. I know that people don't want to necessarily, because you're already purchasing, you know, VHS to DVD and then DVD to Blu-ray, and now you're going to do Blu-ray to Blu-ray. It doesn't make much sense, but I mean, if you're a fan of Darkman, which I haven't really met anybody that hasn't liked Darkman, and if you haven't seen it, it is it's definitely an experience. And if you're a fan of comic book movies, even though this isn't you know, necessarily a comic book movie, but it has the feel for it 100%. And it's a nice upgrade. And of course, if you don't own Darkman, there you go. Just buy this.
Buy it. We can go around real quick and just kind of give us our kind of history with Darkman, when you guys first saw it and everything like that. So I'll go and start. I initially saw this originally on VHS. I'd never seen it. Didn't see it in the theater. I know it came out the year after Tim Burton's Batman. So I was a huge Tim Burton's Batman fan, and
you would be,
of course. And so when this came out, you know, I don't even remember really seeing trailers. I just knew it was there, but I never really had the desire to see it, you know, as a kid. And and I would always see it kind of on cable, and I would always watch a little bit of it, never really see it all the way through. But when I first started buying VHS tapes, when I was in college, this was one of the first VHS tapes that I bought. I bought this, and I think double VHS set of like the Terminator or something like that, Terminator 2 or something like that. So this was the first VHS, one of the first VHS that I bought, and then of course I bought on DVD, and then I skipped the Blu-ray, the original Blu-ray, because there's no special features or anything, so I never went out and grabbed it. And then I heard about the Scream Factory copy, so I bought this. So I saw it for the first time when I was in college, and I dug it. It wasn't like my favorite movie, and I didn't even realize at the time I'd only known Sam Raimi from like Evil Dead, and didn't even put two and two together that he directed this at the time. So, you know, it was always one of those, like, it was okay, but I always kept buying it. So, Travis, what's your experience with Darkman? When did you first see it?
I think I saw it in theaters and was really sort of, I just couldn't wrap my head around it at the time. Like, I was like, wait, what? No, this isn't awesome. This is like silly. And it's like making jokes. Like, I thought it was supposed to be badass. Now in hindsight, I realized that was me being an idiot, you know, as a teenager. But yeah, that sort of mix of sort of, you know, arch comic book sort of aha and over the top villains and stuff, like I wasn't ready for it. And but you watch it now and it's, I mean, it is a Spider-Man movie, you know. There's whole sequences with you know, the helicopter where he's hanging from him, sort of going through the city, and the sort of climax happening on the skyscraper, you know. I mean, it's so there, and it's crazy that he did it, you know, way back then with the resources he had. I mean, I'm actually surprised that they gave him so much money to make sort of an original property, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, obviously, I said this, you know, whenever actually, when Spider-Man first came out, which I was a little younger at the time. But if it wasn't for I don't think Darkman, like, I don't know if Raimi would have actually got that job. I mean, it seems when I was younger, that's what I thought. It's like, man, whoever like thought of like, let's pick a director to direct Spider-Man. It's like they watched Darkman that night and were like, this guy, we need to have him do it. Cause it just felt like a total comic book movie. And, it's a superhero film without, you know, having any, you know, exposition with comic books and backstory and all this stuff. It was just something brand new, but so it's just right on the nose of for that audience that was into that type of thing. And you're right, it does have goofy moments, but it works. It works really well.
Mm-hmm. Brad, when did you first see Darkman? Did you see it in the theater?
So it's one of those that I can't really recall. I know my mom really, really was into it. She was always kind of a Liam Neeson fan when I was younger. And I know that my mom turned me on to it. She definitely mentioned it. I don't remember when I very first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a film that I definitely give breaks with. And it gets better and better each time that I see it. And then I wonder why I actually left it so long. Because I mean, I bought the Blu-ray when it first came out, the older one. And then I recently had this one, and it's just, and it really surprises me each time, because I think to myself, man, why did I take such a long break to watch this again? And, it definitely has like this cult, you know, fan base. And it's definitely, I have never heard anybody talk any shit about Darkman. The sequels, yes, but not, definitely not the original.
Yeah. Well, for the two of you who haven't seen it, it's, you know, Darkman is directed by Sam Raimi. It's written by Sam Raimi. And I think it's based off like a short story that he did. And then Chuck Farrer. I can't pronounce his last name. He rewrote the screenplay, but it stars Liam Neeson, Frances McDormand, Colin Frails, and Larry Drake. Who I guess at the time
we all know the Coen brothers definitely rewrote that script.
Yeah, they were definitely involved as well, and they were all kind of buddies. You know, I guess they all lived up in Silver Lake, you know, in the LA area, and they were all buddies, and that's the whole reason why Frances McDormand got cast in the film, was because she knew the Coen brothers and they knew Sam Raimi, and so.
So what you're saying is Darkman was the first sort of hipster.
Yeah,
comic book movie. That's great. One of those, bunch of those Silver Lake filmmakers getting together. You know, making a little. Oh, I'm the hero, but I'm like burned. I'm all mumblecore. I get it.
I like to give Silver Lake shit, just because I had a friend who lived there, and I visited there a few times, and I always feel out of place because I'm not wearing skinny jeans and I don't have a mustache, but.
It's not too late. You can pick them up. There's actually a skinny jean and mustache store in Sunset Junction, right on the corner there. So next time you're in town, I'll bring you there. Well, and we will also get you some shoes you can wear without socks.
There you go. Well, see, by the time I actually get around to doing it, you know, mustaches and skinny jeans will be out of style, because that's how progressive.
Yeah, but you're bringing them back. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Being retro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because I was actually I think there's a scene when they're going over the medical sort of process, mm-hmm. of creating Darkman, and I think one of the extras may be one of the Coen brothers.
Yeah, well, one of the extras is I was going to bring this up. One of the Coen brothers, and then
Bruce Campbell has a cameo.
A cameo, and then.
Liam Neeson's in it.
Yeah, no. John Landis is in it. He has a mask on. Director of American Werewolf in London. And then the nurse is one of the actresses. I'm thinking it's Jenny Agutter. I'm going to pronounce the name wrong. I'm horrible at pronouncing last names. But yeah, so
Jenny Agutter.
Agutter.
I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. That's how you spell it.
I think she plays the nurse. So it was pretty funny, you know, listening to the commentary on this, and you kind of get little bits and pieces of the stuff.
Dude, Neil McDonald is in that movie. I don't know how you say his last name either. But fucking, you know, Dum-Dum from Captain America.
Yeah. Well, I got to bring this up, too, about this movie. I think this has the most ever, like, henchmen ever in any movie I've ever seen. The opening scene to this movie is just incredible with all the henchmen coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, definitely has. I mean, there's henchmen subplots, henchmen like romances going on. Because what was it, like Ted Raimi goes missing,
right?
And then they're blaming the bald guy,
right? I mean, there's, right.
Yeah, it's definitely a rich underworld.
Do you guys know that bald guy's name? Because he's one of those guys I always see him playing a bad guy, especially in like late 80s and 90s. You guys know who that is? He's a character actor. He's
You're not talking about Larry Drake.
No, not Larry Drake. No.
The bald guy. The guy who Darkman puts the mask on and imitates.
Yes.
Man. Yeah, I don't remember that guy's name.
Anyway,
it's Baldy McWilly. Baldy McWilliams, I think. I think he's from Pasadena. No.
I'm not sure.
I tried.
I'll have to look that up on IMDb. But that dude's awesome. And you know, this is one of those movies where you just have to kind of go with it, because there's did he come up with a fat suit? Did Darkman, you know, do a fat suit? Like, how is he different heights? You know? Is he wearing pumps?
You know, maybe you didn't pay attention during the nurse's explanation of what their procedure actually does. Because, yes, not only does it, sever your nerve endings, it allows you to completely transform, apparently.
I must have missed that.
Wait. William Lustig's in this movie, too?
Who?
Did you know that? Bill Lustig.
The director of, like, Maniac Cop?
Yeah.
Dock worker number 4. Yep. Yes.
What the?
There you go.
Now I need to pick up this blue.
That's amazing.
Oh, Scott Spiegel, too. He's director of Intruder. He worked with those guys. They've always kind of worked together. Sam Raimi, Scott Spiegel, like even Tarantino with those guys. So, yeah.
Nice.
No, no one knows who Scott Spiegel is. Just me.
Okay. He's fuck, I wanted to deliver this punchline. He is Scott Spiegel, you mean pool fight bookie from Jean-Claude Van Damme's Lionheart? Love the guy.
Travis, you need to close your computer.
This is the only way I'm keeping up with you guys.
This has been Browse IMDb with Sean and Brad.
Amazing.
I haven't used IMDb. I'm still trying to think of the bald guy's name.
I can't, and I can't.
And if you're on IMDb, why don't you get that name then, Sean?
I don't see a fucking headshot. That's why.
Oh, yeah. God.
See the bald guy.
This guy is sort of beyond IMDb.
I guess.
People are going to think we're a bunch of hacks because we're doing this podcast and have computers going.
Well, listen,
IMDb,
I got to tell you,
movie facts.
Okay, sure, there might be people who can pull this out of the ether, but, you know.
No,
dark and character actor, comma. Sorry.
I'm so glad we have Travis on the show today.
Yeah, guys, but I will now, take all of you can keep your nerd integrity, and I'll just use Google. Bald guy, dark and character actor. Let's see what it turns up.
Now, did you know that Kerry O'Quinn was the hospital patient in Big Ass Spider?
I did not know that.
I was using IMDb. I was trying to think of the face melter's
Nick
name.
The face melter? The guy who gets his face melted?
Yeah, that was the Terry guy I just mentioned.
No.
I fucked this up. Oh, God.
No, that's a horror director, Adam Jarasch, who plays the homeless guy.
Oh, the guy that directed Night of the Demons.
Night of the
Demons remake is fantastic, by the way. I know I always get a lot of shit for saying that, but I am a fan of that.
I love it. I mean, he worked with Evan Katz on Autopsy, which, you know, had its moments. But I thought Night of the Demons from beginning to end knew exactly what it was. And
totally I thought it was completely solid. Plus a killer ass soundtrack. I mean, just alone having 45 Grave on there and Typo Negative. Yeah, that was bliss for me. So
the guy we're talking about is Nicholas Worth.
Nicholas Worth.
Countless there you goons. Go. I Swamp Thing, Dark Man, The Ladies Club, Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad, etc.
Well, that dude's awesome. So where is he gone? Where is he gone?
He is in heaven now because apparently he is passed.
God damn it.
So, oh, here we go. Bring again. Down the show.
Every show we got.
No, this is the most depressing cast ever. This could be actually a theme for you guys.
I know. Well, speaking of other themes, Brad. I know last week I said that I wasn't going to bring up teeth.
Seriously? Like you're doing that as a joke?
I'm not doing it as a joke. This is like one of the first things I noticed when I was watching Darkman. Because, you know, Liam Neeson has kind of like little rat teeth, especially in this movie. Like they kind of just...
That's mean.
Why? You know, I don't
know. You have rat teeth.
He has a broken nose too. I mean, come on. It's part of his look.
That's because he kicks everybody's ass. At least he's got to have some kind of shit going wrong with it.
He has a few set of
he's stuff. Fucking... That was a terror. Who was that? Was that you?
I bought it. I thought Liam Neeson was on the phone with us. I was like, oh my god, Liam Neeson joined in.
Anyway, all I'm saying is the one thing I noticed was when they, you know, they show him like all burned up, like his teeth in the makeup on what they just don't match. You know, they don't match his face. That's all I'm saying. You know.
What's up with you and teeth?
I heard they really set Liam Neeson's face on fire because he's method. And that's why he didn't really work much after that film for a while because he had to get reconstructive surgery. But I might have heard wrong. Anyways, go ahead.
I'd buy that.
What does IMDb say?
I don't know. All right,
what's IMDb? I don't ever use IMDb. Everything I know comes from my own experience.
Oh my gosh.
What is this gaggle you talk of? Gaggle.com? I don't know what this is. Google. Yeah.
So one thing I really like about Darkman is the use of, because I think they're pretty successful at using practical effects. I mean, there's a few things that are a bit, you know, a bit wonky here and there, but you know, the makeup effects, the kind of the effects where they have the like. I guess they use condoms under skin, under like fake skin or whatever to kind of use bubbles, you know, coming up from the whenever his mask would start melting. Did you guys dig the? If you've recently watched this, do you think those effects still hold up?
I mean, I think yeah. I think Raimi's effects for most of his films, like you know, pre Darkman, and I mean even a little bit after Darkman, because I mean he was an independent filmmaker at first, and even I think Darkman, he's still like there is that and it's still carried over to Darkman where he still has that independent feel from you know Evil Dead, even Army of Darkness. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's kind of like studio films, I guess you would say. But personally, I think it was independent through and through. That's just how it felt to me. So yeah, his effects. I mean, that's where he came from. And you know, he did Evil Dead. You know, they had shit for that movie, but you know, they made it work. And yeah, I still think it. I mean, it's cheesy, but I'd rather see cheesy special effects.
Yeah.
Than you know, computer generated bubbles on somebody's face.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but I mean, it's all, you know, what's available to a filmmaker. I mean, if you have to use, you know, CGI for effects, I mean, I'm not, you know, it's a little disappointing, but I mean, it all depends because, you know, that's one thing that I always get a little flustered about is that, you know, people always, I mean, I'm not a big CGI fan at all, but, you know, people have to understand that, and I'm sure Travis has, you know, plenty to say about this too. Is that, you know, making a film, you don't know, like, the logistics and what was happening during that time. You don't know, you know, budget-wise, time-wise, if they could have somebody on there an extra day to pay, you know, the cast and crew to be there for special makeup effects or, you know. So, you know, give people a break is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, give people a break. I think Sam, like knows
how to shoot practical effects and build a sequence where you're not lingering on them too long so they can do their job. And I think that, yeah, like you said, it comes from the sort of lower budget stuff that he had, and where half the trick in selling the gag is the editing, you know, and the shots, you know, in a sequence, constructing it so that the gags come off. I think with Darkman, I mean, it's really fucking crazy how ambitious that movie is in scope for where he was in his career. I mean, like the helicopter sequence, I mean, that's insane where he's like smashing through windows and there's helicopter chase with a stunt guy, you know, hanging from the wire, and then the helicopter gets blown up. I mean, the whole thing on top of the building. I think where maybe he didn't have quite the experience and it sort of shows in the film is the compositing sort of effects, which was probably kind of a newer sort of thing at the time. And maybe that doesn't hold up as much, but when you have, you know, six shots in a sequence, in a gag, and one of them's a practical effect, you know, he nails it, you know, by just what the other five shots are doing. And it's really good. And then, you know, the transformation and the reveal, you know, he's cutting around and sort of hiding the gag as much as he is showing it, or more so than he's showing it. So it actually feels really effective.
Yeah.
So what is your how do you feel about that with between practical effects and, you know, computer, you know, CGI and stuff? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, big portion of Big Ass Spider is CGI. And of course, you know, obviously you can't do some of that stuff logistically with budget wise. But, you know, versus like, you know, Cheap Thrills that has plenty of blood and good times in it, that's, you know, looks great, especially on camera. How do you feel with the CGI versus practical effects thing? Do you always try to go practical if possible? Do you push for that?
I mean, I think it's determined by necessity. Like on Big Ass Spider, we weren't actually able to get Ray Wise, so we had to digitally create him. But the spider was actually real, you know, so it all balanced out, but... No, I mean, I think
that's good.
Yeah, no, that was like the lamest joke. So lame. But, no, I mean, I think especially on the smaller stuff, when you can do practical effects, because you have sort of a condensed shooting schedule, you're not getting as much coverage. If you can actually have a real gag that actors can really react to, that even more importantly, you can see how that gag affects the environment, meaning, okay, a head just exploded. Oh, wow, blood flew on that curtain over there. And when we turn around and get the coverage on the person, you know, watching the head explode, look, there's blood over there, there's blood on their face. Like, it's much easier to sort of ground it in a reality when you're using practical, because it's right there. It's actually happening. And like on We Are Still Here, like, I mean, we had dozens and dozens of gore gags that on paper you might want to maybe try digitally, but just the fact that we're able to pull them off on screen allowed us to sort of tweak scenes and sort of, oh wow, if this happened and you know, the goo flew this way, wouldn't it be great if this actor ran over here to avoid it? And, you know, the scene sort of evolves because the effect is actually there and is a real component in the scene. But yeah, I mean, I think there's certain things that you know, you have to rely on CG, and a lot of what we've done is using CG to sort of help support practical effects. So unlike Starry Eyes, we have a lot of makeup effects and stuff, and we were able to use CG to come in and sort of soften the edges on some of the makeup effects, and then it's the best of both worlds.
Very cool. Well, so I would say that we all agree that that Darkman pretty much holds up, is definitely worth people checking out if by some reason they haven't checked it out yet. Yes?
You guys are talking about Darkman? I thought you were talking about Soul Man.
Oh, man.
Soul Man is a great Blu-ray. Pick it up. Available on Tuesday.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry. C. Thomas Howe looks great in that.
The makeup effects
are pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, let's go into it just really quickly. We're starting to run out of time here, but let's talk about the transfer. Because I know that on some of the reviews I've been reading, and then the review that I wrote, we've all brought up that the transfer is basically it's the master that was used for the previous Universal Blu-ray release, but it looks like Screen Factory came in and they did it. Let me see if I get this straight. The original it's the same master, but Screen Factory did a brand new transfer. So people are noticing some artifacts, some DNR, digital noise removal, things like that. So I wanted to bring that up with this Blu-ray. Did you guys notice that? Because I noticed it a little bit. I noticed that, oh, this looks pretty clean, but it still looked, you know, like an older movie. So I wasn't really, you know, grading it to, you know,
I mean,
really up to a lot. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think it looks great. It's definitely, you know, the best that you'll get out there of mm-hmm. Darkman, even with the older Blu-ray. I think the sound, like I said, you know, I said earlier, the sound's great. I Screen Factory touched this up. And it looks really, really, really good. It's a little dark sometimes. I think you even said it's like a little waxy and glossy at certain points. But to be honest with you, with a film like this in particular, it was hard for me to actually keep on looking at to see if, you know, there was if I noticed big differences, because I got sucked in the movie.
Yeah.
And that happens with things like this, because I think Darkman's legitimately like a good, it's a very, very good film. And it's definitely a movie that you can get lost in very quickly. But I don't think there's anything wrong with the transfer. I think it's good.
No. Yeah. I'm not going to complain about it. I wanted to bring up the audio too, because this is a Danny Elfman score, and I don't know if this was, I mean, it's very bombastic and loud, you know, a lot like, you know, it's a Danny Elfman score. I mean, you can tell his scores for the most part, you know, just by hearing them. Very reminiscent of Beetlejuice and Batman. So if you put those in a blender, you know, that's the Darkman score.
No, and it does, like I said, it sounds great. I have pretty decent sound system with a subwoofer, and my house was shaking, so I call that a plus.
Yeah,
in a good way.
I liked it. Travis, have you seen the Screen Factory Blu-ray, or have you just seen this, you know, streaming, or when's the last time you watched it?
No comment.
All right.
YouTube clips 30 moving, minutes ago.
Moving
looks
along.
Great.
Oh man, that's hilarious. Okay. So let's move into talking about the special features, Brad, real quick. I mean, this is a pretty loaded.
Yeah, the fact that, I mean, Scream Factory always gets, you know, whoever worked on the film, but I mean, they're necessarily working with a lot of horror films that, you know, are lost, and, you know, maybe the actresses didn't really, you know, go too far, or, you know, but Liam Neeson's still, you know, a box office draw. And the fact that they got him for an interview, mm-hmm. a new interview, not anything for the archives, I thought was fucking fantastic, especially having Larry Drake and just this camaraderie, all these people like come in and do new interviews. Screen Factory really, really did a number on this release with interviews like that. Yeah. So it's definitely a plus. Well, I was shocked myself. I knew Rami probably wouldn't do it. That's the only thing. Rami didn't really participate in the release, and that sucks a little bit. But Liam Neeson did, and I think that's a little bit bigger than Rami myself, but whatever.
No, that's great. Like, there's some great interviews, very kind of candid too, with him, with Liam Neeson, and then Frances McDormand's pretty great. It's fun seeing Larry Drake, a more puffy Larry Drake, interviewed here, and then the audio commentary is pretty great. I didn't write down who it's moderated by, but it's with the director of photography, Bill Pope, and they just have some great, it's a great conversation. It's very conversational commentary and not very stale at all. It's fun to listen to if you're into commentaries. So I'd say there's, you know, the only thing missing was a comprehensive documentary, but like, you know, if Sam Raimi's not going to participate, then there's really no sense editing together, you know.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I mean, he's definitely busy, but I mean, yeah. so is Liam Neeson, but
yeah,
dude, so is Bill Pope.
You know, I just say, if you're gonna, you know, when people say, you know, shit about, oh, why, you know, why didn't you do this Scream Factory? Why didn't you that? Because they're working on fucking interviews with Liam Neeson. That's why, you know. So they brought that shit to you. It's not, like I said, it's not a freaking archive or anything. It's a fucking new interview with Liam Neeson on a Scream Factory release, which is, I think, kind of like a turning point for Scream. Like I honestly, when I read that they were doing a new interview with Liam Neeson, I was definitely impressed.
Yeah.
Very, very impressed by that.
Well, I mean, Bill Pope's working on pre-production for Ant-Man right now. He did.
Oh my God. Would you get off IMDb?
That's like sending
you. No. Like, we were at a restaurant earlier today where Bill Pope was with Edgar Wright. Thank you very much. This is insider scoop giving you.
I'm not on IMDb. What are you talking about? I didn't. Nothing.
I don't even have an internet connection. I'm in a cabin in Montana in the woods. I'm talking to you on a ham radio that I made out of yak bones and penguin guts.
We know people. We have our ears to the ground in Hollywood, people. Dear listener,
yeah, exactly. We're connected. We don't know what it's like there in Florida, but where we're at, we got the skinny.
Exactly. Oh, it's terrible down here. I'll just say, don't ever come to Florida.
Well, I would say, you know, kind of wrapping up about talking about the Darkman release for Scream Factory. I mean, it run like $22, something like that.
Yeah, it's one of the more expensive ones, but fucking trust me, there's a reason why. Yeah. I mean, it's they did, even though they might not have, for, you know, the transfer geeks out there, the best possible one, or you thought they could do better, but this thing's packed with special features that will entertain you for a good couple hours.
Yeah, totally. So I say it's definitely worth it. I mean, if you're going to spend, like, I guess the other one is $10 or you're going to spend $20. It just depends what you're...
I mean, it's Darkman. I mean, you know, Darkman. It's a legitimately good movie. So
yeah definitely.
I'm going to Google search things you can buy for $22 before I answer whether or not this is a good value.
All right. What can we buy for $22?
A standing desk. let me see. Hold on. That's all I got.
Okay. Sorry. All right. So either you get a standing desk or freaking Darkman. Okay. I think we've made it clear what you should buy.
Perfect.
The standing desk.
The standing desk, because, you know, sitting down all day long hurts your back. You really need to stand up every now and then.
Do you have a standing desk in that cabin that you're staying at in Montana, Travis?
I'm making it. I'm whittling it.
Then you can buy the Darkman Blu-ray.
There you go. So you don't.
Once I sell this goddamn desk, I can.
All right. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it for.
No. One thing. We kind of had some kind of breaking news. Even though we just started. We talk about Scream Factory a lot, and they're definitely great, but there's no reason why we can't. There's a few other companies out there that are kind of doing the same thing and doing a great job at what they do, and that's Vinegar Syndrome and Scorpion Releasing. They're both doing horror films, kind of the same thing as a Scream Factory, trying to pack in a bunch of interviews, much as content as they can for, you know, these films that aren't, you know, huge. And of course, Scream Factory takes a little bit more pride in their packaging, but Vinegar Syndrome's doing a kick-ass job. And just for all you horror fans out there, I was told I could say this on our podcast that Graduation Day is going to be released in August with a 4K treatment on Vinegar Syndrome. And then October, they're going to be releasing Last House on Dead End Street, both on Blu-ray, hopefully packed with some special features on there. But they are getting the 4K treatment, so I think that's kind of a little bit of a big deal, because now these other companies are doing what Screen Factory does. And, you know, of course, they didn't start the whole thing, but, you know, a few companies are taking great pride in these releases, and I'm glad to see that other people are hopping on this bandwagon. So, nice. But that's it. Boom.
Cool. And, Scorpion Day. Scorpion releasing is, what's the movie there they have coming out very soon?
They've announced it to the public. They were doing, House on Sorority Row and, House on Sorority Row and Sorority House Massacre.
Nice.
They're doing both of those. And they've released, you know, like Day of the Animals, like Beach Girls, which is a great sex comedy. They've done Pom-Pom Girls, My Tutor, shit like that. And they all look great. Vinegar Syndrome, cool. The same. I suggest picking up anything in their catalogs, because all the Blu-rays look great.
Very nice. I'll go ahead and throw links to those two companies on the show notes. You can go to thescreamcast.com and listen to our podcast there and read reviews and stuff like that. Show notes will be there.
And watch Unhung Hero.
Unhung Hero. We got to give a plug for that. So, yeah, you can find us on Twitter at @scream_cast. And you can find me, Sean C. DeRager. Not going to spell it out for you.
No, don't worry about it. No one really cares.
Travis, where can people find you on the internets, the wide world of internet?
As far as, like, former felons? Like, websites?
No.
Because I'm fine to live next to this high school. It's totally totally proof. No, Twitter, @ Travis Stevens. Nice. Instagram, @ Travis Stevens. Facebook, Travis Stevens. Don't confuse me with the Olympic judo star Travis Stevens, because I practice jiu-jitsu.
Wait, that's not who you are?
Fuck. Sorry. Sorry. Yep. Hit me up. Cool. I like friends. And then can we just have just a little shout-out to Sarah Jones, who was a second AC who was in a horrible accident this week on Midnight Rider. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but
no.
But basically, there was a biopic on Greg Allman shooting outside of Atlanta, and there was a horrible accident, and a bunch of people got hurt, and second AC was killed. Mm. And it's just a reminder that no shot is more important than the safety of everybody making the movie. And hopefully, you know, this mistake will be investigated and they will bring the people responsible to justice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a online petition to get her photo added to the Oscar in memoriam. Thing. Okay. So you can go to,
we can put a link to that too.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes. And Travis, if you can just email that to me, or just tweet it at me or something like that.
Yeah.
We'll get that on the show notes. Cool. Awesome. And Brad, where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at Brad F. Henderson, and you can find me on Twitter.
And then you write for?
I write for Pop Shifter. I gave Big Ass Spider a decent review. Boom, there you go.
All right.
You can read it there.
It's okay.
It's 60% of the review is awesome. And then the other 40%, it's... You know, it's hey, there. And
I don't lie, but I tell you what, it definitely surprised me. So there you go.
Cool.
There we go.
Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to our second episode of the podcast. We'll talk to all of you. We're trying to do these, like I said, every couple of weeks. And, you know, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that to get hints at what we may be covering next. Travis, again, thank you very much. Brad.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
See you guys later.
All of you have a great next couple of weeks. Bye bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.